Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It is Norris versus Verstappen versus Piastri for the championship of the world.
I do not think it's going to be an easy ride. I think we're in for one of those title fights where you never can rest easy until the checkered flag goes.
Max Verstappen will not be moved.
From a psychological standpoint, Max has the advantage, no doubt.
Lando Norris takes the lead of the Formula One World Championship.
If he does it this weekend, he wins it. That'll be absolutely fair play to deliver under the pressure.
For the first time really this year, Lando and Oscar are no longer a team.
Oscar Piastri on the attack.
Nicely done.
I think it's actually a really simple weekend for Oscar.
If it all goes south and Max wins, is this going to be remembered as the greatest comeback in Formula One history or the greatest choke in Formula One history?
Welcome to F1 Nation's preview of a mouthwatering title showdown at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me in the Yas Marina paddock are two of F1 TV's finest, former Renault driver Jolyon Palmer and six-time IndyCar race winner James Hinchcliffe. This is the first time since 2021 that the title fight has gone down to the final race. And it's the first time since 2010 that we've had more than two drivers in contention at the season finale. Guys, welcome. How excited are you?
Yeah, really excited. I love the fact that there are three in this as well. Because when you mentioned 2010, the guy that was third won the title that day. Mark Webber and Fernando Alonso covering each other off. In swoops Sebastian Vettel with a win, and he's champion. And it feels like, you know, when you have a two-car race, it's amazing in the title finale. But when you have the third, it's just so open, and it feels that way this weekend.
It's exponentially more interesting, isn't it? It's only one extra car in the race, but it just, the number of scenarios that can play out as a result of that goes up exponentially. And I mean, you talk about 2007 was the time previously that there were three drivers going into the final race. And that time again, the driver that was third going in came out on top. So, I mean, we
advantage Oscar. I mean, yeah.
But it does all come down to 58 laps on Sunday evening. The tension will be palpable. In your experience, how does pressure affect racing drivers and racing teams?
It's the same that pressure affects everyone in sport, I think. You know, it's natural that you get your heart rate's going up. You naturally feel a little bit tenser. You feel jittery. It's easier to make mistakes. You overthink things. So naturally you need to blank it out and think it's just another race. They're all capable of winning this race as they turn up. But yeah, like you said, it's the drivers in key moments. A lot of it you'll be dialed in, but key moments, hitting Q3 laps, the race start, coming in for a pit stop, you think you tense up because this could be the moment you lose the championship. So yeah, you need to treat it as every other race. And the same thing for the race strategists, for the pit crew. Any fumble from any one of these guys can cost the entire year's work.
The interesting thing about this situation is you've got two drivers that have never been in this position at the Formula One level with a team that's not been in this position for quite some time against a driver and a team that have done it 4 years on the trot. So from a dealing with pressure and almost psychological standpoint, Max has the advantage, no doubt. And that is a very clear advantage. It's not a quantifiable thing, but it is absolutely something that he has in his back pocket coming into this weekend.
Okay, let's break it down. Let's look at the candidates now. Okay, Lando Norris is leading the world championship on 408 points. Max is 12 points behind, with Oscar 16 adrift of Lando. Let's look at Lando. He's had 7 wins this season. He will become world champion for the first time if he finishes on the podium, regardless of what Max and Oscar do. And if he drives like he did in Mexico and Brazil, or even here last year when he won from pole position, I think he'll get the job done. But are you confident that he will do that?
I wouldn't say I'm confident that he can do that. He's well capable of it, but we've seen so many times this year where things can go wrong and things out of his control that can go wrong as well. So I think McLaren will be the fastest car. I think the circuit characteristics suit them pretty well. Good range of corners, quite a high grip circuit. Lando won it from pole last year. Oscar was on the front row with him last year as well. So I think there's a lot of things that will go in Lando's favour. For me, it rides so much on qualifying. If he can nail a good Q3 lap, I think he'll be fine starting from the front of the field. I think he has to get a good banker lap in Q3, because then if you don't do that, the tension and the pressure going into that final lap of Q3 will be gigantic, and then anything can happen. And in Brazil, for example, he was the fastest man the whole way through the weekend, missed the first Q3 lap, but dug out an amazing pole lap at the end. And it was like, right, Lando is responding to that pressure. But that's the thing, when you're in a title decider, track limits are in play here. There's some big braking zones where it's easy to snatch a wheel. You don't want to have to rely on one final lap of Q3 to get it to pole position.
Well, and look what happened at Qatar last weekend. That second lap of Q3.
He did it on the first one, which was enough for the front row at least. Whereas if he didn't have that first banker, he could have been eighth on the grid. So I just think it's so important that he has the banker. And then if he misses the final lap in Q3, maybe he'll still be front row and he can do something from there. But if you miss that banker, how can you go and drive at 10 tenths on the final lap of Q3 when you know that if you miss this now, you could be sixth on the grid, seventh on the grid, eighth on the grid, and the championship then is passing you by.
Hinch, it's 2 against 1. There are 2 McLarens against 1 Red Bull. Does that favour or hinder someone like Lando Norris?
I don't think it really makes a difference. I think the biggest differentiator, you could call it an advantage or a disadvantage, is that having your championship contender, one of your biggest rivals, in the next garage, you've got access to his information, his data, his setup. They can, in a sense, help each other. It's going to be really interesting to see that dynamic between the two of them this weekend. We know famously that they have kept this harmonious, you know, sort of atmosphere in the team. But even at this point, I mean, race engineers will start holding things back from one another. The data's open, right? Like, everybody can see everything, but Lando and Will might just have a little conversation on the side that doesn't get broadcast, you know, on the team comm system. You just never know. But I don't think that having kind of 2 cars against Max really matters, because when you have that in a normal Grand Prix, it's because you can kind of split strategies or force the other car into a certain strategy so that your team wins, right? Come Sunday, they're not a team. For the first time really this year, Lando and Oscar are no longer a team.
So papaya rules will not apply. Is that what you're saying?
It's not about papaya rules, because if they run into each other, that's going to end poorly for both of them, right? That's still going to be bad. But in terms of, you know, strategy decisions, I think kind of like what we saw in Qatar is almost a little bit of the same example. You're not going to sacrifice one to force the hand of the other team so that way a McLaren wins, right? Zach and Andrea cannot just look at this as we're trying to make a McLaren win the race. They're trying to get a McLaren to win the championship. And you know, Tom and Oscar, they're going to be doing whatever is best for them. So if someone's trying to get them to sacrifice, you know, to do the early stop or whatever it is to try to force Max's hand, if that's not the best outcome for them, they're not going to do it this weekend.
So in terms of the team, I think they're all individuals, aren't they? And it doesn't really make a difference, because, quite frankly, Yuki's been no help to Max. So they, you know, Max is fighting on his own anyway. Lando is fighting on his own. Oscar's fighting on his own. But when it comes to the overall big picture, you've got McLaren splintered down the middle in terms of pit stop timing and race strategy, whereas Red Bull, will basically discard Yuki's race. They won't. You're not going to have many people on the Red Bull pit wall worrying what's going to happen to Yuki in this Grand Prix.
JP, sorry to interrupt, but go back to 2021. Sergio Perez played a massive role in holding up Hamilton at a crucial moment in the race. And he's not going to get that from Yuki on current form, at least.
No. And the pecking order of the whole field has got so close that Checo could be a fair way off Max, but still be within the pit window of Lewis, and that was enough. Whereas Yuki, there's so many other cars that are in play now that will be ahead of Yuki. Maybe he'll turn things up and, you know, we'll be in for a massive surprise this weekend, but that would be against every other race he's done for Red Bull. So, and that's a problem for Max, because let's not forget, he has to win and Lando has to be off the podium. So if Max wins, who is going to beat Lando and take him off the podium? If it's not your teammate helping out, then you're gonna need help from other cars and other teams.
Do you think the likes of Mercedes could be a thorn in their side?
For me, we could talk about papaya rules and help, but if Max is winning the race and Lando's fourth, who is second and third? So Oscar would be an obvious one. But what do McLaren do? Last lap, Max is winning, Oscar's second. You've got George Russell doing a job for Max being in third. McLaren will have to pull Oscar out and get Lando to the podium. That's the big question, isn't it? But that's what they will have to do.
And do you think Oscar will do it?
I think he'd be silly not to. I think it's too big a long-term risk not to. You can't win it at that point. They've always maintained that there'll be no preferential treatment until someone's mathematically out of contention. If you're coming into the last lap of the Grand Prix, Max is winning, Oscar's second, Lando's fourth, you can't mathematically win it from second. At that point, the call should and hopefully would come from the pit wall. And again, for a driver that's got a long-term contract, they've had this narrative all season long of trying to keep it harmonious for the long term. If he doesn't do it, and I'm Zach Brown, I tell him that, guess what? You're now the number two driver for next year, and he'll be out of that team in no time.
Funny you should say that. I've got the quote ringing in my ears, not bad for a number two driver. And of course, I'm quoting Mark Webber, Oscar's manager, who was in that championship showdown back in 2010. I mean, let's talk about Webber. How can he help Oscar? Because with his 16-point gap to Lando, Oscar's route of becoming world champion isn't quite as simple. There are lots of permutations, but the headlines are that he needs to win the race and for Norris to finish sixth or lower. If Oscar comes home in P2, he would need Norris to finish 10th or lower and Verstappen fourth or lower. So how can Webber help him this weekend?
I think it's actually a really simple weekend for Oscar. He has to win the race, basically. Factually, he has to be first. He can be the champion if he's second, if Lando runs into trouble and basically doesn't finish the race. But for Oscar, he has to win the race. The great thing for him is the form that he suddenly showed in Qatar was race-winning form. If he can carry that into this weekend, as I've said, I think McLaren will be quick. And I think for Oscar, the pressure, the jitters I was talking about, I don't think they apply for him because he still has very little to lose. The championship's pretty much passed him by, which is why I think he was as surly as he was after the Qatar Grand Prix, because I think he realizes now, from 16 points, two contenders ahead of him, he's up against it. So he has to go and win the race and then hope that something happens to Lando and that'll be enough for him. And Mark will know very well how that can be because of the 2010 example where Mark and Fernando were so focused on each other, they left the door open, didn't finish in the top five, and suddenly Vettel's winning the race. And that's sort of the situation that Oscar has to do. Focus on yourself and hope for some magic.
I think that's the key point for the guy in third. And that's why the last two examples that we cited, the guy in third ends up winning because first and second are so focused on one another. As you say, the guy in third has one mission. They just have to win the race regardless. That's pretty much the deal. So they can focus on their own race. Even if they win it, it might not be enough, but they've got to start there. And then the first place car is so focused on covering off what the second place car is doing that sometimes they get themselves into these downward spirals and they're covering each other, but they've opened the door for two or three other cars to get in the middle, and that's where it creates a problem. So yeah, I agree with you that Oscar is kind of psychologically, again, in the best position because he's just got to go get on with the job.
And if Oscar's winning the race, there is no need for team orders. If Oscar wins the race, that rules out Max entirely. So it's the McLarens fighting each other.
One anomaly for Oscar is that he's not driving in FP1 because McLaren are fulfilling their second young driver obligation of the year with his car. How much of a disadvantage is that going to be for him?
It seems insane that you're going into a title decider with a championship contender and you're taking him out of the car. How did we not address this earlier in the season?
Well, shall I tell you something? Statistically, the drivers that have missed FP1 this year have gone on to outqualify their teammates more often than not.
Interesting.
And they've statistically been quicker in
qualifying. Yeah, but none of those races were title deciders, JP.
They weren't. But so the two races that Lando's missed this year in FP1 were, I would say, his two strongest drives. Austria, he blitzed the field in qualifying, had a really good commanding win. And
Mexico.
Well, it was a romping victory, wasn't it? For 30 seconds?
30 seconds, yeah.
And he missed FP1. It doesn't matter. I really don't think it'll make a difference unless Oscar has an issue in FP2. So you are opening yourself for that. If he has a mechanical or something happens at the start of FP2, he's then in trouble. But FP1 in Abu Dhabi is really unrepresentative. Look, I'd rather do FP1 than not, but statistically, it makes very little difference. The track will be so different. The car will be so different in FP2 anyway.
You're also putting the car in the hands of someone that doesn't race it. I mean, if something happens, is it Pato this weekend?
Yes, Pato Award, yeah.
He's a safe pair of hands, isn't he, Hinge?
Safe pair of hands, but accidents happen.
Quick hands.
Things happen. He's famously quick hands. But if for whatever reason he puts a wheel wrong and puts that thing in the wall and then the whole team's on the back foot getting it fixed before FP2.
I would kill him. I mean, if I was Pato, I'd go to the airport. I'm not coming back. Helmet on, suit on.
You want to talk about pressure of the weekend, right? This kid now has a ton of pressure on him as well because he wants to go out and do a good job. But he also knows if he puts a foot wrong, Oscar will kill him. Zach will kill him. Andrea will kill him. Everybody will kill him.
I'll add Mark to that list as well.
Yeah, Mark will kill him. So he's going to go around driving reserved. And as you know, it's when you start thinking about it and trying to drive safe that often is when mistakes happen and situations occur. So it's kind of a precarious situation regardless.
Tell you what, Pato, we've got an idea. Just don't do any laps at all.
Just do in-stops.
That's a deep dive into the McLaren drivers. There's one last thing I wanted to discuss, which is something Zach Brown said on our sister podcast, Beyond the Grid, a few weeks back. He said, I want to make sure if we don't win, Max beats us and we don't beat ourselves. That is important. Well, Zach, I've got some news. The last couple of weekends have not gone well for McLaren. There was the double disqualification in Vegas, obviously, and then the strategic error, I think we could call it, in Qatar last weekend. Are they in danger of beating themselves?
100%. So I already mentioned if Max wins, who beats Lando? And you're thinking, okay, the Mercedes, the Ferraris will be better this weekend. They could do it. But more likely is something else happens to Lando. Reliability has been, well, it's only been a problem for him in Zandvoort, but it was costly. They've had some slow pit stops, the DQ, the strategy. These are things that are more likely going to affect him, I think, than him just genuinely being beaten by Mercedes or Ferraris. It's a problem. And the whole team will know it as well. So back to the top of the pod, they've got to try and put, you know, all of the jitters and the questions out of their mind. But it's difficult when you're just off the back of a double DQ, you're off the back of a sort of laughing stock strategy to then reset. Because if something goes wrong and Max wins and McLaren themselves have imploded here, the fallout will be really bad for them.
I mean, it's insane to think that a team that has a 300 points advantage over the second team in the Constructors' Championship might not win the Drivers' Championship. I can't get my head around that.
They'll never live it down if something goes wrong from here, I think.
So if it all goes south and Max wins, is this going to be remembered as the greatest comeback in Formula One history or the greatest choke in Formula One history?
It'll be both, but I think we'll remember it more for the choke.
For the choke? Do you think? I was going to say more for the win from Max. I think one of the greatest comebacks in Formula One history, but also sporting history.
Absolutely. I didn't want
That's
to be
wide
as,
in
know,
the net.
Yeah.
Completely agree, but it's both, isn't it? It's both. How has he managed to come back?
Yeah, one only happens with the other.
And he's more than 100 points away. Max had given up on the title at Budapest. He said, I won't win another race this year. Yes, they've stepped up. The Red Bull comeback has been amazing. We know how good Max is when things are working, and they have been working much better for him, and he's executing to put the pressure on. But all of the things that have gone against both McLaren drivers in the run-in, you've got, let's not forget, Baku, really bad on both sides of the garage. Austin in the sprint, the contact between the two of them, the double DQ, the strategy in Qatar, the penalty that Oscar got in Brazil, the crash that Oscar had in Brazil in the sprint where he just caught the curb and put it in the wall. All of these moments have just allowed Max to creep into a championship fight that he has had no right to be in terms of car pace and performance.
Well, in his own words, he's taken advantage of other people's failures. That was his line in Qatar, and he re-emphasized that after the race as well.
And also, I still think you've got this thing that if Lando doesn't win it from here, I would really struggle to sleep, because he's come over the line in Vegas with a 42-point lead in the championship over Max. So as he crossed the line in Vegas, he has one hand on the title, and what has happened since has opened the door for this genuine pressure now for this weekend. And he's still very capable of doing it. We saw him handle like a level of pressure last year in this race, and he won. But this is another level. And if he does it this weekend, he wins it, that'll be absolutely fair play to deliver under the pressure. Because also the last two weekends, it's not really been his doing that's cost him all these points.
Well, in terms of what Max needs to become a five-time world champion on Sunday, he has to at least finish on the podium. Anything less will not be enough to win the title, wherever Lando and Oscar finish. Max's clearest route to the title on Sunday is to win the race and for Lando to finish fourth or lower. And Red Bull does have a history of flourishing in high-pressure situations, hasn't it? Look at all the championship showdowns over the last 20 years that they've been in Formula One. Look at individual races like Qatar last weekend. They were the first to make that call to pit, and I think a lot of people followed them.
As a rounded team, I think they're amazing. I think they, yes, have the best driver in the field, but the strategy department, Hannah Schmitz, was up on the podium. It was a great coup for them to have pulled that off. The pit stops, they very rarely get it wrong. But they're also punchy. They're not just conservative on the strategy. When they go punchy, 9 out of 10, it comes in for them. And the amount of times where you just think, how have they managed to get themselves into a winning position from here? And yet there they are. And they're winning races that, again, they haven't deserved to win, but because every element of the team is operating at a really high level and making very few mistakes.
Well, we do a prediction every race preview. This is going to be a stunning one, right? Guys, who is going to be world champion on Sunday night here in Abu Dhabi?
I think Lando will be champion.
And do you think it'll be an easy ride for him?
No. I think Max will win the race, and I think the Max will be putting on the pressure, and I think Lando will get to third to do it. I do not think it's going to be an easy ride. I think we're in for one of those title fights where you never can rest easy until the checkered flag goes, but I think Lando will do it.
Are you with Lando, Hinch?
I have the exact same thought, that with his buffer, with the competitive order of the cars, I think Max will be able to kind of use his psychological advantage and a good car and a good driver and win the race. Lando will be content to finish third. It wraps it up. Again, it's going to be nerve-wracking the whole time, but I that's what I see happening too.
You have to go with the guy with the points advantage, don't you?
It's the best place to be. It always is.
I also think Lando gets a little bit of a hard time for dealing with pressure as well. And it's been a bit of a narrative that's gone. This will be you know, the major test of him that he'll have to, you know, live or die by over the winter. But when you think back to if he lost the race last year, Ferrari are Constructors Champions, and he won from pole. He did everything he had to do to win the championship for McLaren single-handedly because Oscar was out of it. The title run-in sees the most pressure that he's ever had in his life. And I think we've seen the best form he's ever had in his life as well. Qatar was maybe not his absolute finest weekend, but up until then, he has been ticking every single box, really, being ahead of Oscar, nailing it. So this will be the biggest test, but I think the narrative that he can't cope with the pressure, I think it's going to be tested, but I think he can pass it.
It seems there's going to be a twist in the tail somewhere.
Don't discount Ferrari. Because...
Right. Okay, that's interesting in itself. So after the debacle of Qatar last weekend for them, you think they can pull it back?
I'm not sure about Lewis. His head is in a tough place right now. But I do think Charles had a one-off miserable weekend in Qatar as well. And where he's been in recent races as well, he's got some good form around here. He had an amazing drive last season to haul himself back to the podium, didn't he? And you know, if we're talking about George maybe getting there, Kimi's on better form. Charles is capable of digging out a great qualifying lap, and I don't think on pure merit he'll be quick enough to challenge the McLarens, but if anything goes wrong, this is not going to be like Qatar, I think, for Ferrari, particularly for
JP,
Leclerc.
I feel I need to ask you again about your prediction for world champion. You've said Max is going to win the race.
No,
now,
I stand by.
George could be on the podium. Charles could be on the
I'm
podium.
I'm teasing more jeopardy, TC. That's all. I still think Lando will do it. But I'm going to say, I think I'll chuck in George's second, and Charles is the thorn in the side of the McLarens that never quite punctures the tyre.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
All right, guys, there's one other big news story in the paddock this week, and that's Red Bull's announcement that Isaac Hadjar will race for them alongside Max Verstappen in 2026. Hadjar's been promoted from Racing Bulls, who have confirmed Liam Lawson and 18-year-old F2 driver Arvid Lindblad as their driver pairing for next season. Now, after five seasons on the grid, Yuki Tsunoda's been dropped, but he will continue as Red Bull's test and reserve driver. No big surprise. It's been the sort of paddock rumour for a while, hasn't it? Do you rate Hadjar? Do you think he can take the fight to Verstappen in the same car?
Only one way to find out. No one else has been able to do it, so they kind of have to. He's shown such good form this year. You know, definitely a candidate for Rookie of the Year. Really, really impressive. I mean, the bounce back from what should have been his first Grand Prix in Melbourne, which he wasn't able to take the start of, you know, two races later, scoring points in Japan, and then throughout the year, just been so consistent, working so hard, has a great reputation within the team. They kind of have to, right? Yuki's not getting it done, so they've got to move on to the next one. The bigger question for me is Lindblad a safer pair of hands than Yuki back in the Racing Bulls with such a massive regulation change coming for next year? They obviously think so. They might know something I don't. You can argue that, you know, Yuki's had his shot 5 years, couldn't cut it in the top team, time to go. But if you rewind back to the end of last year, start of this year when he was at Racing Bulls, he was very competitive. He's getting into Q3s. He was scoring points. He only had two races against Hadjar, so there's not really a fair comparison there. But he was ahead at the time.
It begs the question, what is the role of Racing Bulls in Formula One? And I thought Alain Permain, their team principal, sort of emphasized again that it's about young drivers. He said, "We are an incubator for talent," was his quote.
Therefore,
Yuki doesn't fit that bill anymore, does he?
Fair. And that's fair. If that's their position, that's fair. I feel like 2 years ago they were saying, nope, we're not the little team anymore. We're going to really try and be our own, stand on our own 2 feet and do our own thing. And that's why Ricardo was brought back. So I think they kind of need to make up their mind. If they are going back with the incubator role, then yes, fine. That makes sense. Lindblad's the right pair of hands. If it's, let's try to get this team as far up in the Constructors' Championship as possible, I don't know if a rookie in a massive rule set is better than Yuki. It just, you know what you're getting with Yuki, which at times might not be enough for them. But when there's so many question marks and you don't know so much going into 26, is at least having a known quantity behind the wheel an advantage? Obviously, they don't think so, but...
How good do you reckon any of these guys are if you put them up against someone that's not in the Red Bull Young Driver Program in Formula One? Because that's the thing we've never seen. So Hadjar has come in, look, objectively, done a great job. Podium in Zandvoort. You don't do that if you're not a really top driver. But he's beaten Lawson. So Lawson's come in and only been beaten by Tsunoda. Tsunoda has come in and beaten Lawson last year. Okay, he's had Gasly beat him a couple of years ago. We're all saying he's stepped up because he did a good job against Nyck de Vries, did a good job against Daniel Ricciardo, but Ricciardo was smashed by Norris. They've all then been smashed by Verstappen. And it's like they're in this whirlpool of Red Bull young drivers. I'd be fascinated to see what happens if you put a Carlos Sainz goes to Racing Bulls. How good is that Racing Bulls car if you put in someone that we know we have more of a metric for on the side of how good they are? Because whenever anyone steps in to go alongside Max, they get trounced. fair dues. Max is a, you know, maybe the greatest driver ever. But if I was coming into Formula One and I was being promoted alongside other young drivers that were coming into Formula One, what a great chance for me that is to prove myself. If I'm coming into Formula One, but I'm coming in alongside Carlos Sainz, Nico Hülkenberg, Esteban Ocon, seasoned campaigners that have got results on the board, that's a tougher job. And if Hadjar gets promoted to be alongside Max and gets trounced next year, you've then got Lindblad and Lawson. How do you judge Lindblad and Lawson when you've got really no benchmark for how good either of them are? I also think the Racing Bulls car this year is really good and underrated. I think the team have done a good job. It's a funny situation going on there.
Have you felt this for the last 20 years? The Red Bull
I'm airing it, TC.
No, have you actually felt... For the duration of Red Bull's young driver program?
Well, I think you've had metrics that have sort of proven themselves as well. So you had, you know, going back in the day, you had Sebastian Vettel, did a great job, won the race for Toro Rosso, completely dispatched of Sebastian Bourdais, went to Red Bull, beat Mark Webber. Wow, okay, the young driver program is good. This guy's a generational talent. Daniel Ricciardo is up against Jean-Éric Vergne. But these guys also, I think the difference is they had outstanding results at the junior level. So Jean-Éric Vergne was a you know, an obvious protege coming through. Daniel Ricciardo was an F3 champ, you know, World Series by Renault, could have been champion. Demonstrated what he could do, went to the top seat. Max Verstappen and Carlos Sainz, bit of a wild card. Two rookies have proven that they were very good choices. But in that rookie season, you don't completely know. Now, when I look through the junior record, Yuki Tsunoda was third after, what, two or three seasons of F2? I think he's equipped himself pretty solidly, but he's not come in. If it was a Charles Leclerc or a George Russell or a Bortoleto or someone that has won in the junior series, you know more what to expect. But Liam Lawson never won in Formula 2. I look through the record of Arvin Lindblad. This year he's sixth in Formula 2. Last year he was fourth in Formula 3. The year before that, he was third in F4. What credentials has he got to necessarily jump in? And we know that this guy is a generational talent. If he's a generational talent, I'd expect him to be winning these series more.
JP, it's a good point. I suppose the acid test will come in 12 months' time. If Max Verstappen leaves Red Bull, will they shop for a replacement outside of the Red Bull program, or will they promote from within? Because they've only ever promoted from within. Like, as you say, Vettel came in, he was the guy, and then after him Ricciardo, and after him Verstappen. They haven't had to shop outside. What will they do? That'll be the acid test for the program,
right? And legitimately, if Max wasn't driving for Red Bull this year and you had Yuki Tsunoda plus, let's say, Isaac Hadjar or Liam Lawson, who are the next two obviously in line, I think they would be ninth in the championship. Maybe they'd be eighth. That's the gulf that we're trying to deal with here. Max is 396 points. Yuki has 30 odd. Sorry, I've missed the second number. 30 odd. I should come up. 33. Not even 35. I was generous with 30 odd.
Dealing with Hadjar specifically, is the regulation change a good time, as good a time as ever, to go in and be Max Verstappen's teammate? Because it's going to take a while, even for Max, to get his head around the new cars.
It is, because, you know, the whole thing with the Red Bull car, right? Everyone says this car is built around Max, and Max is the first one to put his hand up and say, no, it's built around being the fastest race car. I just happen to be able to figure out how to drive it better than other people. And I think that's true. If you talk to other people that have worked with Adrian Newey in the past, I say this with a grain of salt, please take it how I mean it, he doesn't really care what drivers think. He's going to make the fastest car. Proof's kind of in the pudding. This is a very difficult car to extract the maximum out of. When you get it there, it's obviously phenomenal. It's been that case through this entire generation of rules. But with a brand new rule set, Adrian Newey's no longer part of that program. Is there going to be a conscious effort to make something that's a little bit more well-rounded, that's something other drivers can get closer to the maximum potential of? Is it good to have Max able to get 99% and the ceiling of that is the fastest car by X tenths? Or is it actually better to have a car that two drivers can get to 100%, but that ceiling is maybe a tenth or two less? If you are going into this car, if you're Hadjar and these rules are staying next year, you're almost expected to get beat and beat handily. what does that do to your stock? I don't know, because he has eliminated everyone that sat beside him. I mean, Checo's the only guy I can think of who got fired mid-contract, took a year off, and his stock went up because of the performance of everyone else that sat in that seat. So for Hadjar, yes, it's absolutely an advantage that we're going in with a new rule set. It doesn't guarantee that this car is going to be any easier to get the best out of. You do have the opportunity to learn this new rule set against one of the guys that everyone's expecting to get on top of it very quickly because of the extra sort of mental bandwidth that Max seems to have while driving at the limit. It sounds like that's going to be something that's going to come in handy with the way energy management is going to work, you know, in this new rule set. So for him, it's a good opportunity and a good situation. And I'm just curious how, without the newly driven engineering department and philosophy, where that car ends up, and can someone else actually get close to him?
Yeah, and new Red Bull powertrain as well, just to complicate things for them. All right, well, guys, thank you very much. It's going to be very exciting. I can't wait, I must say. I have to go back to 2021 when I felt this excited about the final race of the season, and I'm sure it will not disappoint. So thank you both very much for your thoughts.
Cannot wait for it, TC.
Always love a three-way battle in the final race. This is going to be fun.
What a weekend we've got in store. In selected countries, you can watch all the racing on F1 TV, where Jolyon and Hinch will be offering their expert analysis. And you can keep across the action at F1.com, the official F1 app, and at F1 on social media. We'll be back to debrief qualifying on Saturday and for reaction to the outcome of this title fight on Monday. Make sure you follow F1 Nation on your podcast app to hear those shows as soon as they're available. As ever, thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.